Florida Matters, the convention is coming right up. Join the conversation at WUSF on Twitter. Now let's head over to Carson Cooper for Florida Matters, the convention. It's 9:06.
And we are live in Donna's studio at WUSF Public Media in Tampa. Florida Matters, the convention. I'm Carson Cooper. Well, they kicked us out of the convention center and the Tampa Bay Times Forum last night, but it has been an amazing week. A feast for political junkies, the media, not to mention the candidates. Local businesses either loved it or tolerated it. Demonstrators here were low. Their relative low numbers surprised a few folks. Commuters, for the most part, at least tolerated the closed streets, the barricades, and the traffic. But if you need some reassurance that things will be getting back to normal soon in the Bay Area, the Tampa Bay Times Forum is next set to host a bucking bull riding competition in just over 3 weeks. So, message to Charlotte. Tag your it. But it has been quite an experience in Tampa this week. Tampa Bay Partnership is a regional marketing group founded in 1994 to conduct regional research and to help get business and government back on track and keep it on track to make the Bay Area pop when it comes to economic growth and development. And Stuart Rogel is the CEO of Tampa Bay Partnership. It is so good to see you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me today.
If you have a question for our guests, we would love to hear from you. Our toll-free number is 800-444-4193. You can also take part on Facebook at facebook.com/WUSF. So, Stuart, you've been our competition for the 9 a.m. time slot all this week with this live web stream. Front Row Tampa Bay?
Yeah, well, I don't know if we've been in competition, but we've been very busy this week. We did 17 hours of live web streaming program about the business and economic development opportunities in Tampa Bay from downtown, and we felt like we were right in the middle of it all, right in the middle of it all.
And you were. You were Channel Side. That's where the studio was. You had local TV personalities Kathy Fountain and Frank Robertson hosting.
Yes,
and
we did.
What exactly were they hosting? What is Front Row Tampa Bay?
Well, what we did, we're as you mentioned, we're a regional economic development organization that markets Tampa Bay for business. And we felt like the best way to get the story out this week was to not through the print media or through words or pictures like we normally do, but to get the people who were actually undertaking business and economic development around the entire Tampa Bay region to tell their stories live on TV in front of a live audience, in front of the cameras, so that they themselves could really just personalize that and really get the message out. And so that's what we did. We had 125 speakers who came and spoke to us during those 17 hours. And we talked about all kinds of topics from everything. We had a bald eagle from Lowry Park Zoo to we had entrepreneurs that were coming and telling their story to we had folks from Turbis Tumblers and manufacturers and just a whole array of folks that came and shared the story. And now we've got this all down on video and ready to go.
Wow. If you have a question for our guests, we'd love to hear from you. 800-444-4193, 800-444-4193. There was this other thing going on there. It was upstairs from Kathy and Frank, the Social Media Command Center. And I believe on the phone now, we have Doug McLean, the VP of Marketing for Tampa Bay & Company, which is a tourism marketing agency, supporting the Social Media Command Center. Doug?
Good morning, Carson.
So I'm picturing mission control at NASA with rows of folks parked in front of computer screens. Is that kind of what you were doing there?
That's pretty much it. We had a whole wall of monitors just actually monitoring all conversations that were occurring during RNC week about Tampa Bay. And we were just a real compliment to Stuart Rogel's organization, Front Row Tampa Bay downstairs. And we both really worked together to market Tampa Bay to the world during RNC.
So unlike the web stream downstairs, which was aimed at an international audience, you were interacting in real time with folks right here in the Bay Area during the convention?
That's correct. You know, Front Row Tampa Bay was really pushing a lot of content and messaging about Tampa Bay to the world. And we were upstairs actually receiving a lot of the content, a lot of the conversations via social media about Tampa Bay.
And so you're basically like a modern-day 411 information system.
Correct. We had two primary goals, which was really to serve all the 50,000 attendees that were in town, as well as the 15,000 media that were here, to to really help them with any information and questions they may have about our destination, if they needed to find a restaurant, how long the trolleys were.
Okay. I think we lost. Are you there, Doug?
Yes, I'm here.
All right. We have a caller on the line now, the number 800-444-4193. Hi, Mark. Mark in Tampa.
Hey, hi. I live in the Tampa Bay area, and I'm just curious if there's been any analysis on what the net economic impact is going to be with the RNC. I only ask because I suspect that the downsides have been, I don't know if they've been, you know, considered to the full extent, you know, with all the inconveniences to local folks, the road closures, you know, the shutting down of county government and the redistribution of the resources outside of downtown. I'm skeptical if it was worth all the hassle. And I wonder if there's going to be a way to take a good look at the Tampa Bay economic impact, you know, after the convention and see if any of this has translated anything positive.
Stuart Rogel, great question. The economic impact, you know, a lot of folks are predicting Super Bowl times four. How are you going to measure that?
Sure. So the economic impact, I think, first of all, just it's going to take a while to figure this all out, really. Understand that we had just literally millions and millions of impressions of Tampa Bay going on this week through the convention. And I think those impressions are just priceless in terms of being able to get the message out. We at Front Row Tampa Bay know our work has just begun to take all this material and video that we've produced and be able to share it and get it back out to people. But if we get one company that looks to locate, or Doug is more successful in getting more visitors to come to Tampa Bay, the Tampa Bay region, then that's going to be a significant impact. But these things take time, and over time we've got to continue to market and promote and tell our story, and that's exactly what we're going to do.
You know, a number of businesses did not like the intrusion.
Right.
And they did suffer.
Yes, there were some businesses that indeed didn't suffer. We were downtown for quite some time, and if you weren't inside that zone, there was not much going on. So I think a lot of businesses really didn't expect that. And so there were some disruptions, and those are recognized. There were some other things that we really benefited from, all the improvements that occurred in the area, all the infrastructure improvements that getting ready, the Wi-Fi connections that were built, the sprucing up of the streets, the improvements to our security and our police force that will stay with us. So those things are measurable, and they're out there now. And then, of course, the hotels and the folks who service our visitors that were here, those are measurable.
Mark, thank you so much. Yeah, that's a big concern among folks in the Bay Area. Was it worth it, you know, having this big convention? Hard to say. I mean, the last convention in Florida was 40 years ago, and a lot of folks have to look back to other cities like St. Paul or Denver. Doug McLean, this command center and this instant sort of feedback with visitors, they did this at the Super Bowl back in February in Indianapolis, right?
That's correct. The Super Bowl was one of the first ever social media command centers, and then most recently the All-Star Game in Kansas City for Major League Baseball was the next major command center, and then this was the first ever social media command center related to a national political convention. And this was really very different than a sporting event. Those are fun events that everyone's excited about, and this was a business meeting basically here in Tampa Bay, and we had to filter out a lot of different conversations versus the command centers that occurred in Kansas City and Indianapolis earlier for the sporting events.
I imagine on Monday you may have been filtering lots of questions about Isaac, you know, storm concerns. Describe the conversation and how it evolved from Monday and then when the convention started and on through the week.
Sure. It actually worked out really well to have a command center in place as Isaac was kind of bearing down on the Tampa Bay area at that point. When we realized that the convention would be closed on Monday, we actually initiated a new hashtag, Rainy Day RNC, and that was really a list of all sorts of activities and restaurants and things for delegates and media to do on that day off during the convention. So our hope was really to spur more economic development locally, as those delegates weren't kind of trapped in the Times Forum. They were actually out in our economy spending money. So Having a command center in place to be able to respond with activities and museums that were open that day and the restaurants, it was actually very helpful to have that command center in place.
Now, we've got Facebook, we've got LinkedIn, Plaxo for a while. I think that's fading away now. But what social media conduits were you plugged into? Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare?
Carson, we were on all those. We were monitoring Instagram, Facebook, Foursquare, Twitter, all the primary social media channels. And then we were responding out of Twitter as our primary vehicle. We were using the hashtag Tampa Bay, and that was really our goal, was to promote the brand Tampa Bay as a destination.
All right.
I can have some preliminary results. Just during that week, we monitored over 190,000 conversations. Around 1,500 per hour were going through that command center. In total, we gauged almost 5.5 million impressions, and if you add in all their friends and all the people that actually saw that, we were up to 1.9 million total reach. So it was we think a really good success of getting Tampa Bay's message out literally to the world.
On the good old-fashioned telephone, the number 800-444-4193, 800-444-4193, Bronson is in Thanatosassa. Good morning.
Good morning. I wanted to ask Mr. Rogel a question. He spoke about impressions. How do impressions for a national convention like this compare with the impressions of, say, for a Super Bowl? We've been fortunate to have both. How do they compare and contrast?
Stuart Rogel?
Yeah, Bronson, I think your question was, how does this event compare to Super Bowls that we've had in the past?
As far as impressions, yes.
As far as impressions. Well, good question. First of all, the one thing to know that there's about four times as many media that were here for the convention than there was for Super Bowl. So literally the eyes of the world were focused on Tampa Bay. And so we felt like there was a real opportunity to push our message out through that media. And I think we did. And, you know, one example is we've had back-to-back-to-back stories about what we've been doing at Front Row Tampa Bay and in the Social Media Center. And let me build on what Doug just talked about a little bit, because Front Row Tampa Bay really, we work together very closely. Visit Tampa Bay, Tampa Bay and Company, the Tampa Bay Partnership work very closely on this. And what Doug did to monitor the traffic, monitor that social media traffic, and for us at Front Row Tampa Bay to be able to share that out on hashtag Tampa Bay, which we're continuing to do. I shared it today, that a story on that. So we used that to really amplify our message. And I think we learned a lot about how to get impressions out there. Before we came to launch Front Row Tampa Bay Live on Monday, we already had 14 million potential impressions out there through all our different media, everything from the airline guides, where 600,000 people read that alone, to all the Facebook and the Twitter and the newsletters we sent out and the press releases that we sent out. We knew we touched 14 million people who heard about Front Row Tampa Bay and the Tampa Bay region before we even started the show. And then it got expanded once we launched the show and went live, and then when we were able to take that social media center and push positive message about Front Row Tampa Bay out there.
Bronson, thank you so much for your call. Quickly, what are some of the business highlights that of the Bay Area worthy of showing off? I know there's healthcare, defense.
Sure.
You've named a few.
Yeah, we covered all those. We covered healthcare. We covered defense. We covered technology. We talked about the Florida's High Tech Corridor, which we're a part of. We talked about visitors and conventions. We talked about the entrepreneurs that were here. We had a great spotlight from Mr. Vinnick. He told his story about why he's chosen to move his company, his business, his family.
Jeff Vinnick, the
owner of the Tampa Bay Lightning, and that was a great story. We had President Genshaf from USF right here, and a lot of her team, Steve Clasco from USF Health, talking about the Camel Center. So we had just an incredible number of stories that we really went through and talked about all the different businesses that are here and the different industries that are growing and the different opportunities to really grow businesses and expand our economy.
All right, quickly, and Doug McLean, I want to ask you, is this a permanent endeavor now, Front Row Tampa Bay permanent and the Command Center permanent? It sounds like just a great idea to keep going.
Oh, that's a really good point. We plan to live on beyond with this program. We have created a social media hub that really monitors all these conversations that the public can see at social.visittampabay.com. that's going to live on beyond this. And even today, we're monitoring the hashtag Tampa Bay, responding to the delegates as they leave. And we can reactivate this for any large event if we host in the future, whether it's a Super Bowl or even another large convention. This is just a perfect way to market to delegates and attendees and even residents during a high-profile event such as this.
And Stuart, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'd really also like to echo what Stuart said. This was a partnership of 14 civic organizations from across the Bay, around the area, and we worked the past year together putting together a series of programs in Front Row Tampa Bay and the Command Center were really the culmination of the last two of those programs. We were in most of the in-flight magazines during the month of August with 20-page sections about Tampa Bay. We had outreach in New York City with media. There was just a full complement of programs that we put together, and I just really want to echo the partnership that we've formed with all of these organizations, Visit St. Pete Clearwater, Tampa Bay Partnership, and Tampa Bay and Company, and all the other organizations as well. This, I think, just serves as a good starting point for us to work together to market this region as one region.
And Stuart Rogel, the streams are still going on.
Oh, yeah, the streams are going on. You can go out to frontrowtampabay.com, and you can see all the different segments and watch it for yourself anytime you like.
Stuart Rogel, the CEO of Tampa Bay Partnership, and Doug McClain, the VP of Marketing at Tampa Bay & Company. Thank you so much. Have a great Labor Day weekend.
Thank you. You too, Carson.
Thanks, Stuart. Thanks, Carson.
All right, coming up, how the media have handled all this, and was this the breakthrough moment for Mitt Romney? Analysis from the Poynter Institute and USF political science professor Seth McKee, plus the convention history as our wrap-up of the 2012 Republican National Convention continues with Florida Matters, the convention on WUSF 89.7. And live from Donna's studio at WUSF Public Media in Tampa, this is Florida Matters, the convention. I'm Carson Cooper. Rick Edmonds specializes in business and politics at the Poynter Institute in St. Petersburg. Welcome.
Good to be with you, Connor.
Carson.
And, Carson, I beg your
pardon.
Did you
spend a lot of time at the convention?
I didn't. I'm mainly a TV consumer, and we had a couple events associated with it, so we got a little up close with that.
You know, one thing I heard, I've repeated this too, like it was the effect, 15,000 journalists. I mean, really? I got to thinking about that. That is a lot. I was there. I wasn't counting people, but that just seems like a lot.
Did you go through the big press building?
Yes.
By day of the convention center?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So 15,000?
I'm not so sure.
I'm not so sure.
In connection with the Tropicana event, I heard that setup there could really only accommodate 7,000 or 8,000. I think that's about what they had.
I want to talk about what those 15,000 journalists were doing there. Our number is 800-444-4193, 800-444-4193. Was there anything different about the overall coverage of this convention versus, say, St. Paul or Denver back in 2008?
Well, I think the biggest thing to my mind was, and it wasn't brand new, this convention, but the rise of fact-checking and question about whether claims made from the stage there were accurate, because that seemed to be constant. And you know, I'm a little focused on it since we're associated with PolitiFact, but especially in Paul Ryan's speech, the question of very eloquent speech, did it have a lot of things in it that were wrong?
Has the fact-checking been fair? I mean, you know, you hear the critics who say, hey, you guys are fact-checking the heck out of Republicans and what they say, and you give Democrats a pass, and you know, you
Well, I do know that. I think the acid test will be next week if the same levels are. But I was actually amused. This is before the convention. A Republican group in Virginia made that allegation. They studied and they said, you know, many more of these fact checks are in Republicans. Well, in Virginia, Republicans run the state as they do here. And, you know, there's also, I don't think you can assume that each party lies equally. Maybe they do, maybe they don't.
Our number is 800-444-4193, 800-444-4193. Chrissy in Clearwater. Hi, Chrissy.
Hi there.
Yes, you have a question.
Well, I had a comment earlier about the benefits of this convention being held here, whether financial benefits result or not. I think there was a very good light shown on really the police, how they handled it. And unlike a lot of cities that have these big kind of events, we didn't have, you know, the violence and the number of arrests and it really just showed a good light that if someone wanted to have a big event or a summit here, we could handle it. And that's even with a lot of our police being pulled off for emergency, things with a storm. And I think that's one thing that hasn't been touched upon yet that really did show a good light for Tampa.
Yeah, Chrissy, that's a great point. As far as the police seemingly having handled all this very well, the security zones were handled, that has to project positively among folks out of town, the nation, as far as if Tampa has the goods to host, or the Bay Area has the goods to host.
Yeah, I think so. And that's in contrast to the last Republican convention in St. Paul, where there was some fairly serious disorder. There were a lot of arrests that... in the end, didn't result in prosecutions, and the whole thing went very smoothly here, even to the point, as we read that when the food truck pulled out to go to New Orleans, the police brought over 100 lunches, which were very welcome.
Chrissy, thank you so much for your call. Our number is 800-444-4193, 800-444-4193. Conventions these days, these are not your grandparents' conventions. There's no brokered conventions, deals among the candidates or the delegates. They're pretty much, when you think about it, they're just infomercials, right? And there's sort of a dwindling appetite for television viewers of these conventions.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think even granted that they're just infomercials, and that's really been true probably for 20 years now. It's not brand new. There's still kind of an interest in what do they say about themselves, how effective the presentations are. And I was thinking about that last night with the sequence of Clint Eastwood, Rubio, and Romney. There really wasn't a lot of mediating of that. It was really kind of an unfiltered message. But I think you're right, too, that the, the kind of the old-style coverage of every talk, which you can see on C-SPAN, or the business of bringing in commentators and hearing this buzz in the background, it all seems sort of old.
But I wonder if the Nielsen ratings for these conventions really indicate whether or not we're taking this all in. I suspect social media may have a lot to do with it. When you can go to YouTube and watch Ann Romney's speech or join a conversation on Facebook about politics, are we seeing the beginning of the end of this big-time network coverage?
Well, I think we already have had for several cycles now the network's cutting back to an hour a night. And I don't know all about the ratings, but, my understanding is that at least the expectation was that last night Romney's speech would get a pretty good viewership. Maybe not quite Super Bowl, but American Idol.
I was trying to check around some of these numbers. The Tuesday night, around 20 million, mm-hmm. According to Nielsen, tuned in to the 10 o'clock hour around the time Ann Romney was speaking. In 2008, 37 million.
Wow.
That's a big contrast, isn't it?
So
that's a big drop, but I just wonder if more folks are just taking it in elsewhere.
Sure. And, at the end of the day, that's a challenge for the TV industry in a lot of ways, that people tape and watch Hulu, and there's less of an audience right at the time that they're broadcasting.
Rick Edmonds is with the Poynter Institute, and our toll-free number is 800-444-4193, 800-444-4193. You can also take part on Facebook at facebook.com/WUSF. The city's that host these conventions, of course, and we've heard this all week, they depend on this macro coverage of the event to show off their cities to a nationwide audience to attract business and tourists. So what happens if this does evolve into sort of a micro coverage online and on YouTube and such? How do cities evolve to that?
Well, I think there is a case for scaling it back. There's a sort of an inertia that they keep doing what they've been doing and keep doing it over a period of three or four nights. But, I wonder about, this is a story for later, how the local people who put up $55 million, or I shouldn't say local, but the various sponsors who put that kind of money into it feel they get the bang for their buck. And there's a little bit, I don't think it was a negative except for the weather for Tampa, but at the same time, there's kind of a feeling that is it a stage set in the case of the CNN grill, which and the comparable things at MSNBC, you sort of could be anywhere. And in fact, they rotate that to whatever city it is. So I don't know that it's as big a dose of local promotion as one might hope.
Mm-hmm. Our number is 800-444-4193, 800-444-4193, facebook.com/WUSF. The major networks decided not to cover the first night of the GOP convention, which was going to be Monday. Ann Romney was scheduled to speak. The RNC moved her to Tuesday. Isaac, of course, would make this a moot point when they postponed the convention anyway. But when the networks initially decided to skip Monday, how did you see that? Could the networks have been accused of bias against Mitt Romney?
Well, I suppose they could have. On the other hand, the Democratic convention is scheduled for just 3 days, falling as it does in the Labor Day week next week. So, you know, on the sort of principle of equal coverage, 3 and 3 is equal.
Okay. So yeah, all right. 3 days here, 3 days there. On Facebook, Nicholas is wondering about Clint Eastwood. Did you see any of that clip?
I saw all of that.
Okay, it was a little unusual. I think you would have to agree. Did that hurt Mitt Romney with Clint Eastwood up there talking to that chair?
I don't think it was very helpful. It was a little bit crude, and it went on quite a bit too long. Somebody pointed out that another thing that happened was that the quite good film about Romney, which maybe did better than Romney speaking from the teleprompter to humanize and introduce him, that was separated by, thanks to Clint Eastwood and Marco Rubio, by about half an hour from when Romney actually spoke. So putting those two things together, I think, might have given him a stronger boost.
All right. Thank you so much, Nicholas. On Facebook, by the way, facebook.com/WUSF if you have a question, or on the phone at 800-444-4193, 800-444-4193. Rick Edmonds specializes in business and politics at the Poynter Institute in St. Petersburg. So grade the media. How did the media do this week?
Well, I'll give them about a B. I think they do what they do. I really don't see outside of social media, Twitter. We'll credit them with the big media, the traditional media, getting on to those platforms and incorporating some of that into their coverage. But just as the convention's a kind of a standard format event, I still think quite a lot of the coverage is relatively predictable. As I said earlier, I think the question about fact checking and whether to call out things that that seem to be inaccurate. New York Times editorial page, for instance, was really, really kind of ferocious and vicious on that subject, putting up, these are a pack of lies kinds of editorials very quickly after people spoke.
I think many conservatives and folks in the Republican Party would not be surprised by that.
No, and by the same token, I tuned in Fox, and I thought Fox's coverage yesterday afternoon was good, and they have access to quite a lot of the people who are here that you want to hear from.
Rick Edmonds with the Poynter Institute in St. Petersburg, thank you so much.
Thanks. Good to be with you, Carson.
And now our daily feature, Name the Convention, and here's where we get to jump into the time machine and head back in time to a past political convention, and we're going to play an audio clue here. And based on that clue, you get to name the convention. Now, this convention, here's a little clue for you. It was the last time in the 20th century when one of the candidates tried to get delegates released from their voting commitments. And when he realized that was not going to work, this was part of the speech that you heard that night.
And because of you, this has been a happy campaign. You welcome Joan, me, and our family into your homes and neighborhoods, your churches, your campuses, your union halls.
Well, yes, a very familiar voice there, but during what convention? Another clue and the answer in a moment, plus your calls as we wrap up the 2012 Republican National Convention with Florida Matters, the convention on WUSF 89.7. And live from the Donna Studio at WUSF Public Media in Tampa, this is Florida Matters, the convention. I'm Carson Cooper. We are having some fun with conventions of the past to see if you can name the convention. In the clip that we just heard, One of the primary candidates lost his challenge for the nomination by asking that the delegates be released from their commitment to this guy.
I accept your nomination. And I am proud to run on the progressive and sound platform that you have hammered out at this convention.
Of course, Jimmy Carter, the incumbent. That was the 1980 Democratic National Convention at Madison Square Garden in New York City. Famous also for the gaffe that President Carter made while remembering a certain Minnesota senator who had died several years earlier.
And the party of a great man who should have been president and who would have been one of the greatest presidents in history, you put Horatio Hornblower.
Oops. The Hornblower? I don't think so. The Carter-Mondale ticket would not be successful, losing to, of course, Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush in the popular and the electoral vote that November in 1980. So there you go, a nice bit of convention history there. Seth McKee is an associate professor of political science and the chair of the Department of History and Politics at USF St. Petersburg. Great to have you back. So where were you in 1980?
I was in Oklahoma. I was about to go into second grade.
Okay. So looking back at this week at the convention, any Hornblower moments? we have kind of pointed out that the Clint Eastwood thing last night was a little,
right,
just a little different.
On the part of the candidates, and the people, the party brass, there weren't any real gaffes to speak of. Now, we can question the honesty about some of what Ryan said, but it was helpful for the campaign. Clint Eastwood was the surprise that did not help, but that was sort of more strange than perhaps damaging.
You mentioned surprise. All this week, this surprise mystery guest, everybody was talking about it, was going to be Sarah Palin, folks are thinking it might be Nancy Reagan or even a hologram of Ronald Reagan, speaking of him. So were you surprised it was Clint Eastwood?
Not terribly surprised, just because I sort of had a lead up to that. You can't keep these things secret for very long. And so it's kind of leaked with enough time to not really be surprised, so to speak, if you're a junkie like me.
Yeah. 800-444-4193 is our phone number, 800-444-4193. You can also take part on Facebook at facebook.com/WUSF. Gary in Wesley Chapel. Hi, Gary.
Hi, how you doing this morning?
Good.
I had a quick question for you. I live in Wesley Chapel, where the Texas and Louisiana delegates were held at the Saddleback Golf Course. I understand that the Florida delegates were also held over at Innisbrook Golf Course. If the Republican Party wants to declare themselves as a party of fiscal responsibility and the stewardship of the public's dollar, why house their delegates in expensive country clubs when moderately priced hotels like DoubleTree could have done the job just as well for a fraction of the cost?
Gary, that's a great question. Seth McKee, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I was having a hard time getting all of what he said there.
Gary noted that the Florida delegates, for instance, were staying at Innisbrook. I don't know if Ryan's Priebus realized what a nice place that is, but they're staying there. They're being put up in the fanciest digs possible. And if it's all about fiscal responsibility, why not stay at a DoubleTree? And nothing against DoubleTree, but there are different room rates.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be lots of hypocrisy of that kind. This is something we can point out with either party pretty easily. Look, both parties have taken $18 million of taxpayer money to bankroll these conventions, and we haven't even said anything about that. People want to stay. They want to stay in comfort, and they do.
Great question, Gary, in Wesley Chapel. And if you have a question for Seth McKee, the number is 800-444-4193, 800-444-4193. Ask your question on Facebook, if you wish, at facebook.com/WUSF. So the big question I have, Seth McKee, did Mitt Romney have the breakthrough moment that he was aiming for last night?
I think he did probably a little better than expected. And I say that because the one thing that the media really wanted from him was this sensitive emotional side, that he's not just a robotic sort of wooden figure. And he gave that to us. He got kind of clenched up there at the beginning when he was talking about his life story and his mom and dad. That was the sort of thing that the media wanted, that voters wanted to see teased out of him, and he delivered. So I think in that sense, he did a lot of what he needed to do.
Ann Romney, of course, was instrumental in that as well, or at least that was her attempt. Did she deliver?
Yeah, and the interesting thing I thought about that is that he did a better job being actually anecdotal about things like the rose on the bedside table. I mean, that sort of thing really came more from Mitt than it did from Ann.
The big complaint about Mitt Romney among his supporters is that, nobody seems to know the guy.
Yeah, and
what are we supposed to know about him anyway?
Right, I don't know. I mean, I think part of that also feeds into the narrative that here's not a guy we've known for sticking to certain positions, okay? Major issues he has switched positions on. And so it's hard to know who a guy is when those main issues that voters follow, he takes different positions over time. That's going to make a voter confused and say, hey, who really is this guy?
One that comes to mind is the auto industry bailouts.
Sure.
Early on, he was against, then he was sort of for, and so,
Yeah, I mean, but, some of the biggest issues in American politics, the issue of abortion, right? I mean, Obamacare, Romney Care, what's this guy's position? Now he's very much opposed to his biggest achievement as a policy when he was Massachusetts governor.
800-444-4193, 800-444-4193, or on Facebook at facebook.com/WUSF. For Seth McKee of USF St. Petersburg, Reggie in Tampa. Hi, Reggie. How you doing?
Oh, just fine, just fine. You have a wonderful program. I have just a short comment. I've been listening to everything that's been going on, and I was just wondering what it would look like if we had accepted the railroad federal money and had that new high-speed train, being built between Tampa and Orlando, and how that would have made Tampa look very progressive and really created a whole lot of jobs. I'm wondering, that would have even made Tampa look even better.
Reggie, great question about high-speed rail. Of course, Governor Scott turned down the federal money that would have connected Tampa with the Orlando area eventually. I don't know if it would have been in time for this convention.
No. Right.
But, how would that reflect positively or not before the nation?
Yeah, I'm not sure anyone really remembers that at this point. I mean, obviously, we as Floridians remember that, and Reggie does. But, I mean, the thing about that is it would have taken a long time, to get that laid out and put in here. But again, our governor was a no-show. So there wasn't really much emphasis on the negatives attached to him and that being one of the real things when he came into office that upset people.
Well, they had to peel a few speakers away because of the delay. I guess he didn't make the cut after that.
Right.
One comment I heard a lot this week is as far as the convention goes in Tampa, and there are a lot of great reviews. One was that it was not very pedestrian friendly, and some were lamenting the lack of a local rail to get around, as some other cities have.
Right. You look at Tampa, it's one of these sprawling suburban cities. It's not really laid out like its sister city, St. Pete. It's not very dense in that sense, and so it's hard to get around.
And you can't really nail that on Governor
Scott.
Hillsborough County voters said no.
Right.
To that.
I mean, that's the way it is.
All right. Reggie, thank you so much for your call. The number is 800-444-4193, 800-444-4193. Or on Facebook at facebook.com/WUSF. Seth McKee is Associate Professor of Political Science at USF St. Petersburg. There was a predictable amount of bashing the other side during the convention. You'd certainly expect that. There was also a lot about Romney, Ryan, how they would turn the economy around and reduce the debt, shrink the government. It's always easier to be the challenger anyway.
Sure.
Because you don't really have to run on a record. President Obama, however, does have a four-year record now to run on. How much, next week in Charlotte, how much bashing the other side do you predict we'll see versus look what we've done so far and what are we going to do next?
Yeah, there will be some bashing. I mean, expect that. And expect that especially in terms of, you know, things that are perhaps false that were said. You know, they're going to counter that. They have to counter that, especially if these false statements are something that bolsters the Romney-Ryan campaign. But at the same time, they got to put their narrative out there. They're going to spend a lot more time, Obama and Biden, talking about where we are and interpreting why this economic recovery is slow. Romney made big promises last night. He said 12 million jobs. It's not a drop in the bucket. You know, one of the things that is interesting about this time of year is sort of the promises in general, they're so inflated. I mean, who really believes that kind of rhetoric? I don't.
Well, look back to 08 and the Democrats in Denver, candidate Obama was talking about the sea levels falling,
right,
and, you know, some of these very macro issues.
Yeah.
And you could look back and say, hey, where is that?
Yeah.
It didn't happen. So.
Sure. I mean, I think that one of the things traditionally about presidents in presidential campaigns is they're full of these expectations. We call it an expectations gap. Voters want them to deliver, and they really can't. I mean, so much of what presidents and presidential candidates promise is about working with Congress and getting that done. And if you can't have Congress's support, you're going to be stuck.
800-444-4193, 800-444-4193. Is it Ab High in Clearwater?
It's Abby?
Abby. Hi, Abby. Welcome.
Thank you. My question to your guest has to do with the level of self-congratulation and the celebration of the individual that we saw on display, which actually David Brooks had commented on in his column today in the New York Times. And first of all, a lack of serious engagement at a policy level on some of the issues that we're confronted with, but also a serious disregard for the common good or the we, the fabric of community, which we're supposed to be working towards not only improving, but also supporting. And I was deeply disappointed, and the cynical side of me wasn't surprised. So I was just wondering if your guests had any comments on that.
Thank you, Abhi.
I think it's sort of interesting. I mean, a lot of what the Republicans celebrated at their convention was, you know, free market capitalism, by the bootstraps, you know, individual small business entrepreneurial activity. There's a lot more to American society, American life, than just that. And so I think there was sort of a heavy emphasis on that and less about community. But then again, Romney sort of tied it back to his church connection, and that's sort of his community, which is broader and more of a collectivity than, say, you know, praising small business.
There was a lot of focus on character, though, and I don't know if Romney himself came across as being self-congratulatory, but, maybe it's going back to the issue of who is this guy, and so it was trying to explain who he is, and maybe that was at the expense of policy discussion.
Yeah, and I think that's important, but at the same time, you have to say the connection Romney needs to make isn't just about him being a good person, it's him being able to connect with the middle class. He's so removed from that, okay, as a very rich man. And so that's the connection that they have to work hardest on. It's not just, we know he's a good guy, but can he relate to the person who has to get up every day and work a 9-to-5 job? Polls say not yet.
Does Paul Ryan address that issue?
I think he does somewhat, but again, his background doesn't necessarily speak to that as well as, say, a Joe Biden. I mean, this is one of the issues that they have, is sort of saying, okay, we can fix this problem, but we're sort of on high. We made it, and we feel sorry for a lot of the rest of you who haven't gotten there yet.
Melissa in Sarasota is on our 800-444-4193 telephone line. Hi, Melissa.
Hi. My question is going back to the Clint Eastwood speech, and I'm a Clint Eastwood fan, and I have a great sense of humor, but I'm wondering if that sort of was disrespectful to the office of the president? Does it lower the bar, or do we just say, okay, come on, any both sides of the aisle should just have a sense of humor, or are we really dropping the bar now? And that is my question. What does he think?
Melissa, great question.
Yeah, I think that was a great question because, you know, if we sort of track this infotainment that's in politics, we can go back sort of to the moment like when Bill Clinton played saxophone on the Arsenio Hall show. And then we realize now that presidential candidates, they sit on talk show couches. They do all kinds of sort of infotainy stuff. But maybe this was sort of a new barrier of low here, where essentially you have an actor insinuating that our president is saying, go fill in the blank yourself. I mean, that's pretty controversial to say that sort of thing when we're talking about someone who holds that position. So I think, you know, that's sort of the broader perspective on that strange moment.
At the convention, the venue is perhaps the wrong place. Because, you know, it's done all the time.
In a comedy show, maybe that would work okay. But we're talking a convention in you know, moments before we really see the main event.
Thank you, Melissa, for that great question. You know, back to policy a bit, Democrats have long accused Romney of wanting to abandon seniors, and this is potentially a big issue in Florida, you know, turn Medicare into a voucher system, privatize Social Security. But a Quinnipiac poll taken after Ryan's selection, so this is, it might have been about 2 weeks ago, showed Florida voters over 65 back Romney, 55% to 42%. So is this a winning issue for Democrats?
I think the jury's still out on that one. You know, we haven't heard from the Democrats yet. We haven't had the debates. I mean, the debates are going to be extremely important because that small sliver of the electorate that's undecided, they're going to fight over a big issue like Medicare. But again, let's not forget that in 2008, McCain did win 65 and over about 53% to 48% in Florida. So seniors in Florida have gone a little bit more Republican the last cycle. But I think that this could be a pivotal issue depending on how it's interpreted.
The lineup next week in Charlotte is top heavy with female speakers. We've seen Caroline Kennedy in there, Nancy Keenan, the president of NARAL, Eva Longoria. Lily Ledbetter. Now, another, I think it was the same Quinnipiac poll published last week, showed women back the president, 53% to 41%. So why is the Obama campaign placing so much focus on women when it appears that they've got them?
Well, you know, they have a nice gender gap in their favor, which is, you know, fairly regular in American politics where Democrats are going to win more of the women's vote. Obama did better with women last time as well. But I think part of it is if you look at the platform, if you look at the issue of abortion and making no exceptions according to the party platform, that's something the Obama campaign can rally some segment of the female electorate around and really mobilize them because that's taking it a step a little farther than we're used to seeing.
Looking ahead to Charlotte also, were you totally shocked to learn that former Governor Charlie Crist would be endorsing President Obama and will speak next week at the convention?
No, because when you think back to when he lost his Senate race in 2010, he had moved already so far to the Democratic direction. You know, all those peel-off votes that he got really came at Kendrick Meek's expense, the Democratic nominee. But if you think about Charlie Crist, he needs to hurry up. If he wants to challenge Rick Scott, he needs to move from no party to Democrat.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you think he's going to do that and when he might do it.
I think he will. I mean, but I think he's got to sort of ease into that and say, okay, you know, my party really truly has left me and I'm more aligned with the Democratic Party. But you know I'm a centrist guy. You know, I'm the governor for the people.
And another former governor spoke last night, Jeb Bush. He was a relative latecomer in endorsing Romney. He refused to do it before the Florida primary. What did Jeb Bush have to gain from being such a latecomer?
I don't think Jeb Bush really wanted to have a role that overshadowed Romney. I mean, this isn't really about him. He probably would have been our nominee if you're a Republican, if he decided to run. Jeb Bush is someone who can draw in Hispanics, and that's something Romney has a major problem with.
Do you think he was trying to tee himself up, you know, as far as, you know, maybe build up his political capital a little bit, maybe to be a VP?
Well, I think he wants to say, hello, I'm still in the picture. I'm still relevant. Maybe look for me in 2016 if this doesn't work out for Romney.
All right, Seth McKee, Associate Professor of Political Science and the Chair of the Department of History and Politics at USF St. Petersburg. We'll be looking for you again in November.
Okay.
All right, thank you so much for joining
us
here.
Thank you.
And that is it for Florida Matters, the convention. Our show will be back at its regular time, Tuesday afternoon, 6:30, and Sunday morning at 7:30. Our own Craig Kopp will wrap up his week of coverage this afternoon, the convention today at 6:30. Next week, the Democrats will take center stage in Charlotte. Obviously, that takes the local edge off our coverage here in Tampa, but picking up the ball quite nicely will be our colleagues at WFAE in Charlotte. You can tune in to Charlotte Talks at 9 each morning on WFAE.org. Back here, though, our coverage of Charlotte includes, as it did this week in Tampa, a live call-in show from WNYC in New York City, the Brian Lehrer Show, beginning next Tuesday. And NPR will bring you the floor action to you live from Charlotte next week as well. Thanks to our producer, Dalia Colon, engineers Dustin Hapley and Brian Bierlew, technical assistance from Craig George and Sarah Curran. Our executive producer is Scott Finn. And thanks to Mosaic and All Children's Hospital for their support, and especially to you as a listener and a supporter for helping make all this happen. Florida Matters, the convention, is a production of WUSF Public Media. I'm Carson Cooper. Thanks for listening.